All right, good morning. We'll go on the record for this matter today. It's about a few minutes before 10, a little delay due to weather conditions today. It's March 1st, 2012. We're in the Chieftain Conference Center, the Teepee Room, in Carrington, North Dakota, for the administrative hearing in the matter of the siting application of Minn Kota Power Cooperative. My name is Alan Hoberg. I'm the designated hearing officer today. I'm with the Office of Administrative Hearings. As a courtesy to the commission, please turn off your cell phones or your other devices you may have. Are you hearing me all right to the back? It's fine? Okay, good. I'll take appearances at this time from council, starting with the applicant. Ms. Smith, please.
Molly Smith from Frederickson and Byron, and with me is Jared Paul from Minn Kota.
Thank you. Mr. Sagsveen, please.
Matt Sagsveen from the Office of Attorney General, and to my left is Mr. Jerry Lean, and if I could request permission to allow Mr. Lean to question the witness when necessary.
Permission granted. And for the record, there are no interveners in this application. Correct, Mr. Sagsveen?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. And to my left are members of the Public Service Commission, Commissioner Kevin Kramer, Commission Chairman Tony Clark, and Commissioner Brian Kalk. I will shortly call on the commissioners for their opening comments, beginning with Commissioner Clark, who has the electric generation and transmission portfolio. But first, I want to talk about public testimony. The commission encourages public testimony. The hearing today, especially if you weren't at the other two hearings on this matter, will be your only opportunity to present information to the commission. And the commission can only consider evidence, or in other words, information offered at the public hearing in making its decision on this matter. I had a little bit of show of hands a couple minutes ago about who might want to give public testimony, but anyone who's either in favor or opposed or neutral on the application may wish to participate by presenting testimony or information to the commission today. Can I get a show of hands again? Maybe some of you have reconsidered about who may want to present information to the commission today. Okay, it looks like maybe about four or five people. Later, when I get into the hearing procedure, I'll explain how we're going to do that. But I encourage all of you to sign the attendance sheet that's being circulated. And if you'll please indicate on that sheet that you do wish to give testimony, if you wish to do so, that'll help me when we get to that portion of the hearing. Just a brief summary of the application. On September 7, 2011, the commission issued corridor certificate number 121. To Minn Kota, designating a transmission facility corridor for approximately 260 miles of transmission line and associated facilities to be constructed from the Center substation near Center, North Dakota, to the Prairie substation near Grand Forks, North Dakota. On December 2nd, Minn Kota filed applications for modification to the designated corridor, a waiver of procedures and time schedules, and a transmission facility route to be designated within the modified corridor, as was shown on an attached map. Then a notice of hearings was issued, scheduling three separate public hearings. They were scheduled to be held, with each covering an overview of the project, but focusing on specific portions of the project in the specific areas of each hearing. So we've held a public hearing in Washburn, North Dakota, that focused primarily on the portions of the project in Burley, McLean, Oliver, and Western Sheridan counties. That was on February 22nd. Then on February 27th, we held a hearing in Grand Forks, focusing primarily on the portions of the project in Grand Forks, Nelson, and Steele counties. And of course, today's hearing is scheduled here, focusing primarily on portions of the project in Eddy, Foster, Griggs, Eastern Sheridan, and Wells counties. The issue for each of these hearings on this application are as follows. First, will the location, construction, and operation of the proposed facilities produce minimal adverse effects on the environment and upon the welfare of the citizens of North Dakota? Second, are the proposed facilities compatible with the environmental preservation and the efficient use of resources? Third, will the proposed facility locations minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continuing system reliability and integrity, and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion? And finally, is it appropriate for the commission to approve a 1,000-foot wide corridor as requested in the application? Those are the only issues for this hearing today. I will call on the commissioners now for their opening comments, starting with Commissioner Clark, please.
Thanks, Judge Hoberg, and thanks to all of you for being here this morning, and thanks also for your patience as we get a little bit of a late start in relation to our travel delays. If you've been to one of these before in one of our previous hearings, either in the corridor or en route, you have a sense for how this goes. But if this is the first time that you've been here, I'll just go over a little bit of the procedure. It's probably a little bit more formal than you may be used to in county commission proceedings or legislative proceedings, city council proceedings, things like that. You'll notice it's a little bit more formal, a little bit more legalistic. Please know that the reason it's done like that is not because we want to discourage anyone from testifying. In fact, it's just the opposite. The reason we've scheduled a number of hearings throughout the state, in addition to the one that's required under statute, is because we want public participation. It's why we hold them in the communities that are affected. But rather, it's that state law says that the commission can only make a decision based on information that's developed at a proceeding like this, with witnesses and the opportunity for counsel to cross-examine and be sworn in and so on and so forth. We literally can only decide cases based on what's developed at these. So the importance of that for you is this is your opportunity, if there's anything you want us to consider, to do it here today. Every now and then we'll have one of these hearings and someone will catch me outside in the hallway afterwards and say, wow, that was really interesting, but what you really need to know is this. Well, after the hearing's closed, unfortunately, I can't take any of that into consideration or can any of my colleagues. So it really is your opportunity, if there's something you want us to consider, to do so. I'm pleased to see that we have a good turnout here today. And if there's, even if you haven't raised your hand yet, and there's something that you hear along the way, either from a company witness or another witness, a member of the public who testifies, and you think there needs to be some additional information given, please, you know, don't hesitate to step right up. We do look forward to hearing from you. So thanks, and I look forward to a good hearing.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Thank you, Your Honor, and thanks, everyone, for being here. I would just echo everything Commissioner Clark said and emphasize the admonition that whatever you do, do not walk out of here today wishing you had said something. If you have something to say, whether in support, whether in opposition, or just a question or an observation or just clarification, please use this opportunity, because this is the last hearing, the last day on this case. So thanks for being here. We look forward to a good, thorough hearing on the matter before us.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Kalk, please.
Just like to apologize for the delay today, and we're here for one reason, to get your testimony. So if you have anything to say, now is the time to say it, and look forward to a good hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. This is the hearing procedure we're going to follow today. I'll first call on the applicant to present its case in regard to a grant of the application. In other words, the issuance of a modified corridor certificate and a route permit. Ms. Smith has indicated, as at the other hearings, that she'll call three witnesses. Each of the witnesses she calls will be subject to questions by her. Following that, questions by commission counsel and commission staff. Following that, questions by the commissioner. And then I'll allow such further questions as may be necessary of each of the three witnesses. When Ms. Smith has completed her presentation of her case, that is when I will call for public testimony for anyone who wishes to present information to the commission. Again, the commissioners obviously encourage public testimony, and I'll use that sign-up sheet that's indicated, but I'll also ask if there's anyone else who wishes to present testimony that maybe hadn't put their name down. And I'll call your name, and you'll come up to the front and sit at that chair. And I'll swear you in just as I swear in the witnesses for the applicant. And you'll provide your testimony in narrative form to the commission. Then I'll allow the applicant and the commission staff and the commissioners to ask questions of you if they have any questions of you. So please come up and testify if you wish to do so. There won't be a decision reached on this matter today. As has been said, there have been three hearings. This will be the last hearing, but following that, there's a procedure where the applicant will will likely file proposed findings of facts and conclusions of law, and then the commission will consider the record from all of the hearings in this matter. And the commission will issue findings of fact and conclusions of law and a final order as to whether the application should be granted. In other words, whether the modified corridor certificate and route permit should be issued or denied, or as to other appropriate administrative action that the commission may deem needs to be taken. A party not agreeing with the final decision of the commission may have appeal rights or other rights under the Administrative Agencies Practice Act in North Dakota, Chapter 2832 of the North Dakota Century Code, or under the Commission's Rules, Article 6902 of the North Dakota Administrative Code. The burden of proof today, in other words, the burden of persuasion, is on the applicant to show by the greater weight of the evidence that it is entitled to the siting application it is seeking. The last preliminary matters I want to discuss is that I should note that all of the evidence that has been presented at the other hearings is on the record now and has been admitted, and we have copies of that evidence, including the evidence from the corridor hearings, the three earlier corridor hearings, if anyone wishes to see those. So the evidence that the applicant will be reviewing today likely has already been admitted. And again, today's hearings will focus on those portions of the project in Eddy, Foster, Griggs, Eastern Sheridan, and Wells counties. Anything else preliminarily, Ms. Smith, you want to discuss before we begin your presentation?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Sagsing?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Would you call your first witness, please?
Mike Hennis.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning,
Commissioners. Good morning. And I do need to swear Mr. Hennis in, and this is for the benefit of the three applicant witnesses, as well as any of the public witnesses that may present testimony today. And that is, I'm required by law to tell all witnesses at administrative hearings that the maximum penalty for perjury in this state is a Class C felony, punishable by a maximum 5 years imprisonment, $5,000 fine, or both. And of course, perjury is essentially not telling the truth at a hearing such as this. Mr. Hennis, being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, please.
Could you please state your full name for the commission?
Michael Hennis.
And you're employed by Minn Kota Power Cooperative, Inc., is that right?
That is correct.
And what's your business address?
1822 Mill Road, Grand Forks, North Dakota.
And what's your position with Minn Kota?
I am the systems project manager at Minn Kota, responsible for capital, large capital projects, and I'm also the project manager assigned to this particular project.
And could you just briefly discuss your education and your work history?
I received my Bachelor of Science degrees in Electrical Engineering and Engineering Management from the University of North Dakota. I started my career in 1975 with Basin Electric, and I joined Minn Kota in 1994 as an electrical engineer. I've also worked as a project engineer and an engineering manager while at Minn Kota.
And you mentioned that you are the project manager for this project. What are your responsibilities in that role?
I have the overall responsibility for the budgeting and the scheduling, the coordination of all the permitting, design, right-of-way acquisition, and construction of the proposed Center to Grand Forks project.
And could you just briefly tell us who and what different groups of people make up the team that is working on this project?
On a project this size, Minn Kota needs to use the talents of outside resources. So besides the Minn Kota team leaders in engineering, environmental permitting, right-of-way and legal, procurement, communications and public relations, and also construction management, we have hired the services of Stanley Consultants as the primary consultant responsible for project design and construction management. They in turn have hired the services of a local company, Catermas Lee and Jackson, who is responsible for the project survey and right-of-way acquisition. We've also retained the services of HDR Engineering out of Minneapolis, and they're responsible for the environmental and permitting process.
And then if you'll look at what's been previous, previously marked and admitted as Exhibit A. Can you just identify that for us?
Yes, this is a copy of the Minn Kota's route permit application and the corridor modification and waiver request for this project. And these were filed with the commission on December 2nd, 2011.
And I should note that there's copies of the exhibits in the back of the room in case anyone wants to take a look at them. And then if you can look at what's been marked as Exhibit B, and that's already been admitted as well, can you identify that exhibit for us?
Yes, this is a copy of a letter and the accompanying maps filed with the commission on January 20th, 2012.
And can you tell us what the letter and the maps discuss?
The letters discuss one additional modification of the proposed modified project corridor, which was in Eddy County. And it also discusses four minor right-of-way alignment adjustments. Three were made to accommodate landowner requests and one to avoid a cultural resource site. These were located in McLean, Eddy, Wells, and Grand Forks County. And the maps illustrate the corridor change and the alignment adjustments requested.
And during the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility application hearings, we heard some detailed testimony regarding the need for this project. But could you provide just a brief overview of why Minn Kota is proposing to construct this project?
Sure. This project addresses the need to secure a source to meet Minn Kota's long-term energy supply requirements. Minn Kota has agreements with Minnesota Power and Square Butte Cooperative that allow Minn Kota to increase base load generation resources without constructing a new coal-fired plant by acquiring the additional output from the existing Young 2 plant. The proposed project provides the means for transporting that additional base load generation into Minn Kota's service territory. Now, the project also addresses identified grid reliability issues. The proposed project will improve the reliability of the grid to serve load in northeast North Dakota and northwest Minnesota.
And what is Minn Kota's anticipated schedule for the project?
This project was started in 2009 with a four-year timeline. We have now moved to a five-year schedule based on a revised anticipation of the PSC route permit issuance in the first quarter of 2012. The long-term delivery items for have started manufacture, and that has been ongoing. The construction is slated to start the spring of 2012 in the late May, early June timeframe, and the project is scheduled to be in service late fourth quarter 2013.
And this is a little bit of a change from the schedule that was presented in the Certificate of Corridor Compatibility hearings. Can you just explain why the changes have occurred?
The schedule presented at the corridor hearing anticipated a fall 2011 construction start. The change in the project schedule is primarily due to delays in rural utility services, our funding sources, environmental consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services regarding the project's Section 7 mitigation plan for minimizing impacts to the whooping crane. Also, additional time was taken to address landowner concerns when finalizing the route, particularly in the areas where the corridor approved by the commission was wider than Minn Kota had originally proposed. As a result, the route permit application was filed later than initially anticipated.
And then if you look at what's been previously marked and admitted as Exhibit C, and it's also on the board that's on the easel next to you, can you identify that for us?
Yes, this is a map of the proposed project route within the proposed modified project corridor.
And what approach did Minn Kota take to selecting this proposed route?
Once the corridor was approved, route selection was influenced mainly by landowner discussions during the right-of-way procurement process. Landowner requests to move the line within their own property boundaries were evaluated from a technical and an economic basis. Most of these requests for route modifications were accommodated. For a request to reroute the line off of a landowner's property, every effort was made to contact neighboring landowners for input on the suggested reroute. In the majority of instances, these neighboring landowners rejected the suggested reroutes and a route remained in the location originally proposed.
And what were some of the factors that Minn Kota took into account in developing this proposed project route?
Again, primarily it was input from landowners and also consideration for avoidance of wetlands, archaeological and environmentally sensitive areas. These were the primary considerations in the final route selection. We also ran into existing wind leases, and that played a factor. The proposed route is following the recommendations of the potential developers in those areas.
And how did Minn Kota involve landowners and agencies in selecting the proposed project route?
Minn Kota's route selection process focused on engaging in one-on-one discussions with landowners. Also, several meetings were organized to talk to groups of landowners at their request in select areas to hear common concerns. Meetings and discussions with agency and advocacy groups were held to gather input on the final route alignment. These groups that we met with include the Grand Forks County Prairie Partners, the Audubon Dakota, North Dakota Department of Trust Lands, the Western Area Power Administration, Grand Forks International Airport, the UND Aviation School, and the two wind developers along our corridor were Otesco and Infinity. We also used ongoing project-related outreach, including project newsletter mailings and updates to the project website.
And Mr. Phillips will discuss the proposed corridor modifications in more detail, but could you just briefly explain why Minn Kota is requesting modifications to the project corridor that was approved by the Commission?
Each of these corridor modifications is requested in order to accommodate routing requests made by landowners, agencies, and other members of the public, which were made during the public hearings on Minn Kota's Certificate of Corridor Compatibility application, or during the route selection process that took place after those hearings. Mr. Phillips will discuss during his testimony the maps provided with the corridor modification and the waiver request. That they demonstrate that all the modifications are relatively minor and required where the 150-foot wide route was moved just outside of the previously defined corridor area.
And as of today, what's the status of right-of-way acquisition?
The right-of-way team to date has negotiated options and easements for 73% of the project's 250-mile-long proposed route. And that's 73% of the mileage. If you count by landowners, that percentage is just slightly more than that.
And what is Minn Kota's plan as far as construction of the project? Specifically, where do you intend to begin construction and end construction?
During the first year of construction, 2012, the primary contractors will begin construction on the eastern line segment between Cooperstown and Grand Forks. The tree clearing and fencing contractor will also start in this section, but will most likely also be working on the western portion of the project in 2012 as well. There will be off-season work at the Missouri River crossing and other environmentally sensitive areas. The primary contractors will then move into the western half of the project in the spring of 2013, with project completion anticipated by the end of 2013.
And during the construction process, how does Minn Kota plan to keep landowners and local authorities informed of the progress?
Project personnel will notify landowners prior to work being conducted on their property and will be available on call to manage any issues or concerns that may arise. We'll also continue with our project newsletters, and an interactive project website is being developed to help make real-time construction maps and information available to any interested party. The project toll-free hotline will be maintained throughout the construction time frame, and also will continue a direct email contact with landowners who choose to sign up for that service. And that email would then notify of the construction activity along the route.
And how will Minn Kota coordinate with other utilities and road authorities along the proposed route?
The construction manager will provide advanced planning resources, and their job will to look ahead and make the necessary utility one calls prior to augering the foundation excavations. Road authorities will have an opportunity to review the traffic plans proposed in their areas prior to the start of construction. Specific communication requirements will be accommodated along with proposed public notifications planned via newsletters, media, hotline, emails, and other public announcements. An interactive website is also being developed to help make real-time construction maps and information available to the public, as I had mentioned earlier.
And what steps have or will Minn Kota take in order to be prepared for any emergency situations that may arise either during construction or after construction?
The primary contractors on this project are required to provide field safety officers. The construction manager will provide the field safety officers with the contact information and response areas for each local emergency responder along the project route. Minn Kota will also develop an emergency communications plan with the local EMS, firefighters, law enforcement, and local officials. We'll also have procedures for notifying landowners of emergency situations, and these are in place for all of Minn Kota's 3,000 miles of transmission line currently in service, and those procedures will also be used for this project once it's in service as well.
And what steps will Minn Kota take to ensure that the project is constructed in compliance with all applicable permits and in a manner that minimizes environmental impacts?
Minn Kota plans to retain the services of an environmental inspector. This inspector will be responsible for training the construction personnel entering the job, overseeing correct placement of exclusion fencing or markers for identifying environmentally restricted areas, wetlands, streams, and also will be monitoring the construction for compliance with the environmental conditions and requirements of the project. And they'll be also monitoring site restoration following the completion of construction activities.
And if you'll look at what's been previously marked and admitted as Exhibit D, is that a copy of the certification relating to order provisions that was sent to Minn Kota by the Commission and was executed by Minn Kota?
Yes, it is.
And as we've previously noted, Minn Kota intends to is requesting that the Commission waive the requirement or modify the requirement of a 50-foot clear cut across wind breaks, shelter belts, and other wooded areas. Is that right?
That is correct.
And instead, you'd ask that it be a clear cut width of the entire 150-foot wide right-of-way. Is that right?
In areas where that's necessary.
And when would that be necessary?
To meet the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, or NERC's, standard for transmission line reliability, any tree that may inadvertently come into contact with a high voltage transmission line is required to be identified and removed. This may require the clearing of the entire 150-foot right-of-way in heavily wooded areas. Also, extremely tall trees in poor health that are just outside of the 150-foot right-of-way may also need to be selectively removed to meet NERC requirements.
And are there any county or township land use permits that are required for the project?
Yes, most of the counties and some townships in select counties require conditional use permits for the project.
And what counties or townships require those conditional use permits?
All of the counties require conditional use permits or approval for the project, with the exception of Burley and Steele counties. In those counties, the townships of Painted Woods and Wilson in Burley County, Addy Township in Griggs, and Sharon Township and Franklin Township in Steele County have their own conditional use permits. Also, we've identified Fairfield, Logan, and Loretta Townships in Grand Forks County as requiring conditional use permits.
And what is the status of obtaining those conditional use permits?
In Eddy County, no formal process is in place, but county commissioners issued a letter authorizing approval. All the other counties have issued or conditionally issued a conditional use permit for the project. As far as the townships, all of the townships except Grand Forks County have conditionally issued a permit, and with regards to Grand Forks County, we're re-reviewing to see if an additional township requires a conditional use permit.
And based on the studies and analyses that have been conducted and on the testimony you have presented today, what are some of the conclusions that Minn Kota has reached regarding the proposed project and more specifically the proposed route?
Minn Kota has previously provided a detailed testimony on the proposed project's need and importance to the region's electrical transmission infrastructure. In the 3 years of preparatory work leading to today's route permit hearings, The need to make a reliability and load-serving improvements to secure the lowest-cost solution to providing future generations with a dependable electrical supply has not diminished. The proposed route is the result of Minn Kota's extensive efforts to accommodate landowners and other stakeholders' requests when selecting a route within the approved corridor, while also selecting a route that presents the least overall impact.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. Mr. Sagsveen, do you have any questions?
Thank you, Your Honor. Do you have the exhibits in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
Could you, page 2 map, or exhibit, I think G3, and that's the Eddy County modification.
G3, okay.
Yes.
And is that modification to accommodate a landowner request, or is that a cultural resource modification?
That is a combination of several factors. The individual landowner request, also to accommodate the neighboring landowners, and also there was cultural identified on the original route.
And when you say neighboring landowners, did they want it further from their property, or because the corridor is moving up 0.4 miles, what do you recall? What type of reasons they wanted that moved?
I think Mr. Phillips will go into detail. We have a specific exhibit for this discussion, but in general, this route was contained within one landowner's property, but the neighboring landowners asked us to meet that this particular landowner's requirements before they would agree to negotiate for their lands.
I don't have any additional questions.
Thank you. Mr. Lean, any questions?
No question.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
No questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Commissioner Kramer, please.
Well, Mike, you elaborated a fair bit in, quite a bit, actually, after some cross-examination relating to the relationship between the RUS and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the delays and the extra costs. We talked a lot about that in Washburn, but given the level of public interest here today, and you testified to it briefly, but could you elaborate for everybody today on that relationship and why the delays and why the extra costs and how much extra costs associated with those delays?
Sure, I'd be glad to. The RUS, as our funding source, requires that we follow a NEPA, or National Environmental Review process. And part of that process is what we call the Section 7 consultation. And the Section 7 is in regards to impacts to endangered species. The whooping crane is the primary endangered species identified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for potential impact from this project. The whooping crane flight corridor basically follows the Missouri River and expands to the east to about Jamestown on the east side and equivalent miles west into Oliver County and further on the west side. So our transmission line does pass through this wide whooping crane sighting, high probability sighting flight corridor. One of the requirements for the new transmission line was that we adequately provide bird marking or identification on the line to help all migratory birds, including whooping crane, see the transmission line and avoid it. So on a new transmission line, you basically have the opportunity to design in the criteria required to handle the additional ice loading that's presented by those bird flight diverters. And a bird flight diverter is a spiral wrap piece of plastic that's put about every 50 feet on the static line. And what happens is that spiral wrap develops an ice ball, at this, so in our area we can see up to an inch and a half of ice. So at each one of those bird marking locations, you accumulate, 40 to 50 pounds of ice. So that over the 100,000-foot span, that adds up to significant amount of additional weight that the transmission line needs to carry. Like I said, meeting the Fish and Wildlife guidelines on the existing, on the new project was accommodated for, and modifications were made, and additional dollars were spent to market toward their plan. What the challenge was and what caused the delay to Minn Kota specifically was that our Region 6, and it's not unique to the whole nation, it's our Region 6 of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has an additional guideline and requirement. And that requirement says that for every mile of a new transmission line that you install bird flight diverters on, that you have to find an existing transmission line and mark equivalent miles. So in our case, we had to identify 120 miles of existing transmission lines that we could mark to meet the U.S. Fish and Wildlife guidelines. Now, we only have one other transmission line through the Whooping Crane corridor that would meet that. I should correct that. We have two lines, but we have a line from Center to Heskett that runs mostly in Oliver County, but only about 2 or 3 miles of that is suitable for marking, so I always overlook that. But mainly it's our Center to Maple River 345 line that pretty much parallels the I-94 corridor. So we had to do a detailed analysis of that transmission line to make sure that adding that additional weight loading wouldn't exceed the capability of those structures. And the challenge for us was that transmission line was built in the late 60s, early 70s. It started out as a 230 kV line, and in the late 70s, early 80s, it was upgraded to a 345 kV line on the same structures. That upgrade used up most of the design margin in those structures. So our analysis showed that on that existing line, for the spans that were greater than 800 foot, that we could not support without exceeding the safety margins, we could not support additional bird marking. So that limited the amount of miles that we could mark on that transmission line to approximately 50 or 60 miles. And therefore, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determined that we didn't meet their guideline because we didn't have 120 miles that we identified that we could mark. So the two steps that we followed was we solicited our neighboring utilities to see if any of those would host markings on our behalf. If we paid them to put markers on their transmission lines to help us meet the guidelines, would they consider that? And none of the neighboring transmission utilities or distribution utilities in the route area agreed to do that because of the additional liability that placing additional ice loading puts on their transmission lines. And in the recent history, we've had several ice storms that have taken down several miles of both distribution and transmission lines, so everybody is really sensitive to this icing condition. We explained that to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and they basically suggested that we ask utilities, you know, south of us in neighboring states, we took an alternative path. I guess if we're going to spend mitigation dollars, we'd rather spend them in North Dakota. So we went back to the distribution co-ops, again along the proposed route, and asked them if they would convert overhead distribution line to underground on our behalf to actually remove lines from areas that are near a suitable habitat for the whooping crane. Would they do that on our behalf? And four local co-ops have agreed to do that. We've identified over 200 miles of potential overhead line that can be undergrounded, and we identified that to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that we basically only need to convert 35 miles because they'll, in their negotiations, they indicated they'd give us a 2-to-1 credit if we do underground. And the problem is that undergrounding is about 3 or 4 times more expensive than marking an overhead, so we would naturally prefer to mark overhead if we had sure. It available. But that's where we're at today. And
how much cost did that add to the project?
Well, total, it's broken out into several components. The cost to modify the existing design to handle additional ice load was slightly over $1 million. The cost to mark the proposed new line was about $1.5 million. So, and the cost to mark and underground will make the total approximately $3.8 million.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was not a Saturday Night Live routine. That was your government at work. I have nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kramer. Commissioner Kalk, please. No questions? Thank you. Any further questions of Mr. Hennis?
No, Your Honor.
No further questions?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Hennis.
Thank you.
Please call your next witness.
Dwayne Phillips.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Phillips. Did you hear the admonition I gave in regard to perjury?
Yes, I did.
Being advised of the penalty for perjury, do you promise to tell the truth in this matter being heard? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Thank you. Ms. Smith, please.
Could you please state your full name for the commission?
Dwayne Phillips.
And who are you employed by?
Stanley Consultants.
And what is your business address?
My business address is 8000 South Chester Street, Suite 500 in Centennial, Colorado.
And could you just briefly discuss your education and your work history?
Yes, my educational background is in electrical engineering and nuclear engineering. I've got I have 32 years experience in the energy business, including generation, transmission, substation, and distribution areas. I've got over 24 years of a project and a construction experience, designing, building, and operating high voltage systems. And I've been a project manager for about 15 high transmission projects for about 750 miles.
And what's your role with respect to the proposed project before the commission today?
I am the project manager or the project lead for the engineering team, which includes system studies. It also includes project conceptual work, the corridor selection process, the preliminary design, aerial and ground survey, the detailed electrical study work, technical field study work, the right-of-way process and acquisition, the final detailed engineering and design, and I'll also be involved in construction management and construction support.
And have there been any changes in the proposed project right-of-way width, design, or associated facilities since the public hearings on Minn Kota's Certificate of Corridor Compatibility application?
There have been no changes other than selecting the route centerline and determining the structural locations along that route centerline.
And as far as construction, could you discuss for us the personnel that will be involved in construction of the project?
Yes. First off, there's going to be a construction manager who will manage construction and field activities during construction for the owner of Minn Kota. Next, we have the survey team that will provide a staking of structural locations, the right-of-way boundaries, and also marking of environmentally sensitive areas that need to be avoided. Then we'll have a tree clearing and fencing contractor that will clear areas along the right-of-way, replace or move a fencing if required, and install gates and fencing to provide right-of-way access for construction and maintenance. Next will be a foundation contractor that will install drill pier concrete foundations for each structure. Then we'll have a line contractor that will install the structures and actually build the line. And then also out there, we'll have field engineers, an environmental inspector, and construction inspectors that will monitor construction and ensure that the line is built to design and construction specifications.
And are there any limitations on when construction may occur for any portions of the project?
Yes, there are. There have been environmentally sensitive areas that have been identified as requiring construction in an off-season period. The Missouri River Basin and the Alkali Flats native grassland areas are good examples of these. Some areas that have a higher density of wetlands will be constructed off-season for ease of construction efforts and to help facilitate less disturbance to the ground during those construction activities.
And will Minn Kota conduct environmental monitoring during construction of the project?
Yes. Monitoring will be conducted throughout the construction period. Prior to any construction personnel working in any area, all the identified environmentally sensitive areas will be clearly marked in order to prevent disturbance. In addition, construction personnel will all be trained in the recognition and handling of environmentally sensitive areas, of what to avoid and what to do if an unexpected area or artifacts are uncovered. And the project will also have an environmental inspector assigned at full time.
And what are the steps that are involved in construction of this particular project?
The major phases are the right-of-way preparation, the actual construction of the line itself, and then a restoration phase.
Could you walk us through each of those phases, starting with the right-of-way preparation and letting us know what those involve?
In the right-of-way preparation, the right-of-way is periodically marked to identify the edges of the right-of-way. The sensitive areas will be marked to prevent inadvertent disturbance during construction. The trees and shrubs will be cleared, moving aside good topsoil in the agricultural areas. Staking of specific structural locations. There'll be some compaction of specific work areas within the right-of-way. And then access points along the roads and ditches, etc., may be graded to allow access to the right-of-way.
Could you discuss the construction process?
Yes, in the construction process, fence gates are installed or fences are moved or replaced just to allow access. The foundation contractor will then auger or drill out the foundation excavations and pour concrete for the foundations. Once that concrete has cured, the structure is then put together or framed and lifted into place and secured on the foundation. And then the wires are strung through the structure and then set at the proper tension, which is called stringing and sagging.
And what steps will be taken to restore the right-of-way after construction?
After we are done with construction in any given area, the right-of-way gets cleaned up, so we take out all of the construction materials and spoils, those kind of things. The soil then gets decompacted using deep soil techniques. That good topsoil is then pushed back into place and returned to the pre-existing grade. And then temporary access measures, if they were installed, then get removed. And then there'll be a review with the landowner following work to make sure that restoration was done correctly.
And what steps will Minn Kota take to minimize impacts during construction of the project?
There are a number of impacts that we try to minimize while we're out there. One is making sure that the right-of-way gets cleaned up and properly restored. Another concern is public safety around the excavations. So the excavated sites will be filled the same day or will have the proper safety measures to prevent accidents. Interruption of land use activities is another concern. The landowner liaison and the right-of-way agents will work to inform landowners when construction will be in that area and work with landowners to minimize interruptions. We're also worried about a disruption of sensitive areas. The construction contractors will be trained to identify those areas and what to do near them. All the sensitive areas will be marked, and there'll be an environmental inspector to monitor construction activities. We're also worried about road traffic flow. So traffic plans will be developed and publicized so that the public knows where the construction activities will be, what roads we'll be using, and when. And then on the restoration side, compaction is a concern as well, and the construction contractors are contractually liable to decompact the soil and will be monitored by the construction inspection team. Road maintenance is also a concern with the heavy equipment, so before conditions will be determined and agreed to with the county or township or the road supervisors and the construction contractors are contractually obligated to maintain the roads, which will also be monitored by the construction inspectors.
Let's talk a little bit about the criteria used to develop the route. Could you tell us what was considered from an engineering and design perspective during the selection of this route?
Yes, one was a compliance with the Siting Act and siting criteria. Another was minimizing the environmental impacts. Another was addressing any agency concerns. Another was addressing landowner concerns. And lastly, feasibility from a design and construction perspective.
And were the exclusion area, avoidance area, selection, and policy criteria set forth in the Commission's rules considered by Minn Kota when selecting the proposed route?
Yes, they were. A discussion of those criteria is provided in Section 3 of the route permit application, and the exclusion and avoidance areas will be discussed further by the next witness, Mr. Brian Hunker.
And were the factors set forth in North Dakota Century Code Section 49-22-09 considered when selecting the project route?
Yes, they were. Discussion of those factors is provided in Section 7 of the route permit application.
And let's talk a little bit about the route itself. And if you'll look at what's been previously marked and admitted as Exhibit E1 through E10, can you identify those documents for us?
Yes. Exhibit Echo 1 through Echo 10 are the route maps showing the corridor and the route center line.
And if we'll focus, as we've talked about before, on the area closest to this hearing, so we'll be talking about E4 through E7. Could you please walk the commission through the route selection process referring to E4 through E7?
Yes, I will. And I'll try to point as we go along to the maps for those behind me as well. When we were at the corridor hearings, we talked about the fact that the route in general had four major areas. One was the western terminus at the center of substation. One was the eastern terminus at the Prairie substation. And then we had two critical crossing points. One was at the Missouri River. One was at the Cheyenne River. And that basically brought us to the corridor that was issued with the certificate of corridor compatibility. For the most part, we have just gone down the middle of that corridor. So I'll focus most of the discussion on those expanded corridor areas and the selection process inside those. Beginning on the left-hand side of map Echo 4, you're basically coming into the eastern portion of Sheridan County, and this was one of the areas to where at the corridor hearings we had discussed and heard a number of testimonies regarding to the potential to move that line down closer to the section line in that area, and that was one of the expanded corridor areas. Well, on the left-hand side of Echo 4, what is driving that area is the wind farm, the proposed wind development that's in that area, and the agreements with Tesco as to where the routing would be. And then once we move over a little bit into Boone Township, you can see that we do move down to the section line for as much as possible. There is in Crystal Lake Township a little bit of a jog back up away from the section line. That is due to two large water bodies in that area. So we had to get the north of those. And then we drop back down the section line. And then we come in to the first of the larger expanded areas when we were in Wells County. This area, once it was expanded out, we looked at a number of different options. We had four of them that from a design perspective, we began to develop and look at. And early on in that process, a group of landowners with interest in this area had asked to meet with us, and they had proposed going down the 11th Street a route, if you will, basically right in the middle of that corridor expansion item. That was one of the ones that we were looking at anyway, so we took a harder look at that, put a little bit more of a priority on that one. And what we found on that 11th Street is that it met all the siting and criteria, pardon me, and also had a little less impact on a land use than the original corridor, which was up by 12th Street, basically a mile north. In other words, it had a little less impact on the cropland through the area, having a slightly less percentage of a cropland. There was also an occupied residence that was up near 12th Street that we got much further away from. So that kind of drove us going down that 11th Street corridor, then shifting back up to the north side of that corridor and going over to the right side of Exhibit Echo 4. That brings us on the left side of Exhibit Echo 5, where we're basically, again, we're on that northern portion of that expanded corridor region. And again, really being on the northern side there had to do with the occupied residences that are along Highway 52 there, and the fact that we had a very good landowner support in terms of obtaining options through that eastern portion of that expanded corridor. Then that just basically puts us back into the middle of the corridor, all the way to the right-hand side of Exhibit Echo 5, where there is an expanded corridor portion in there, and one of the ones that we're talking about, and I'll talk in a little bit more detail about that when we put up Exhibit later on in just a little bit. And then that brings us over into Eddy County on Exhibit Echo 6, where we have a large expanded corridor in that area. In that area, we had, once that expanded corridor came out, we had developed three options to go through that. One was a northerly option, one was a more a southerly option, and one was basically the option that we have the route center line on now. The northern option had the challenge of a number of larger wetlands that are basically right in the middle of that expanded corridor area. The southerly option had the challenge of the occupied residences down in that area. And on the eastern portion of that expanded corridor region, there are a number of center pivot irrigation systems. And then the original proposed corridor was the one that we got a very high percentage of landowner acceptance on. And so that one was the one that had the least amount of impact going through that area. That takes us over to Exhibit Echo 7. Yeah, can we leave Echo 6 up, please? But going through Echo 7, we're basically right in the middle of the corridor there. I would like to point out that I know we talked about the expanded corridor region that is on Echo 6 a lot when we had the Grand Forks hearing earlier this week. Since that time, we have had discussions with one of those landowners and are actively involved in conversations to look at an alternative on that landowner's property.
And just to clarify, is that Mr. Topp that you're referencing that testified at the last hearing?
Yes, that's Mr. Jeff Topp.
Jeff Topp, yep. And the intent is then to file a late filed exhibit to address what routing preference Minn Kota will present to the commission, is that right?
Yes, and that's after the opportunity to take a look, with those proposed alternatives from not only a design but also a cultural and a economic perspective.
All right, so we would have a late filed exhibit, I guess at this point it'd be late filed exhibit R, I believe.
R?
I think that's where we're at.
Yes, that's correct. So R will be late filed?
Yes.
All right, and that will deal with the Jeff Top modification?
Yes, okay. And it'll be whether we, whatever they decide, agree to at that point or decide to do, present.
Please continue.
And then if you will look at what's been previously marked as Exhibit F, can you identify Exhibit F for us? And I think it's a separate exhibit.
Yes, Exhibit Foxtrot are the plan and profile drawings that show the final structural locations.
And then if you'll look at what's been previously marked and admitted as Exhibit G, can you identify that exhibit for us?
Yes, Exhibit Golf for the proposed corridor modifications.
And focusing on, it would be G3 for this particular hearing, could you talk about the corridor modification that's been requested by the commission?
Yes, the one corridor modification in this area is depicted on Gulf 3. This was the one that Mr. Hennis was talking about as well. This was an area where the original proposed corridor going through, we did find some evidence of cultural artifacts along that. We had some concerns about working through the wetlands that were in that area. And then the landowner approached us and asked one of the many landowner requests if we could shift the route on that landowner's property to the northern side of the property, and that route having a less impact to the environment and being on that landowner's property was an option that we granted through that area. That did, when we had that conversation with that landowner, that did put it outside of the existing corridor.
And I believe you mentioned the wetlands. There are also cultural resource issues along the original proposed route in this area? I may have missed it.
Yes.
All right. And I believe there's one other area that we haven't talked about previously where the Minn Kota may be considering another change to the route and would also require a corridor modification, and that's in Grand Forks County. Is that right?
Yes, there is, and that's best seen on Exhibit Gulf 4. Gulf 4 just shows a portion of this. The landowner that owns the land just south, if you look in the middle of Gulf 4, we're coming up on the western portion of the corridor. This is an area where we had expanded the corridor. It borders the Alkali Flats area. The landowner that would be just on the bottom of that have asked us to consider moving that shift to the east, more south. Right now, the shift occurs just north of that landowner's property. That landowner is asking us to shift on their property. But what that would do is that would further take us down. It would make us have to expand the corridor to the east, further south than we have requested.
And as I understand the request of the landowner, it's essentially taking, instead of taking a corner that goes north and then cuts east, you would cut east and then cut north. Is that right? It's almost like a flip of what you're doing now. Is that right?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, that is correct. It's the same cost on that. But we do have to evaluate that from a cultural and environmental perspective. And we need to look at the design on that, but it looks like a fairly simple shift that is all on that landowner's property.
And we would like to submit a late filed exhibit on that as well, and that would be late filed exhibit S, I believe.
All right. And so that'll deal with that G4 modification?
Yes.
To the corridor?
It would be a corridor and a route modification.
And a route, right.
Yes.
We would have to provide a map of That is like Gulf Four, but it goes further south, sir.
All right. Just for the record then, unless there's an objection, late filed exhibit R and S will be admitted when filed.
I have any objection, I don't think, but I would like to just clarify
sure.
something if I might. Did I hear that right? That you plan on doing additional studies in this area for cultural resources?
No, not additional studies. We just need to analyze and confirm that additional studies are not required in this area.
And if you determine that additional studies are required, then would you file another late filed exhibit, or what process would you use then?
We would have to take that into consideration, and whatever needs to be done would be identified in the late filed exhibit, and we would explain whether additional information needs to be provided or not at that time.
So you would include it in the late filed exhibit S then?
Well, I think that we can't say we would include something until we know whether we need it.
Right.
So that's basically
needed.
What I'm saying. If needed, we'll provide it. If not, we won't. I mean, we'll explain the rationale for why we're proposing what we're proposing at that time.
Okay.
All right, please continue.
I have no further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. All right, Mr. Sagsveen, please.
I don't think I have any questions, but I'll probably just note for the record that I don't believe I'll have an objection to the jet top modification for Exhibit R.
Do we know what that is yet?
Well, it's been described as a map,
right.
Potential map as a late file exhibit.
Right.
Now, if with Exhibit S, you asked me to. Whether or not I had any objections to Exhibit S.
Actually, I asked in both of them. I did say Exhibit R and S.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't
yeah.
hear
yeah.
you say
so
R.
You don't have an objection to either of those?
No.
Other than what you're concerned about, the explanation?
Right.
All right, thank you.
I don't have any additional questions.
Thank you. Mr. Lean?
No questions. Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark, please.
I just have one on E4. There is an occupiable residence towards the very east end of that map. Is that an occupied residence? Has it received the 500-foot waiver? Has that waiver been signed?
Yes, it has.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Commissioner Clark. Commissioner Kramer, please.
No questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Clark, Cock, please.
I actually have a couple. Dwayne, thank you for your testimony. The late filed exhibit for Mr. Topp, the concern I would have is that if it is it all going to be on his property? Can you at least, because if it's not all on his property, that opens up a whole new set of questions.
Well, there have been a number of alternatives that have been looked at. The alternatives I discussed yesterday with Mr. Jeff Topp, they were all on Mr. Topp's property.
Okay, I'll talk to our attorney, because if it's not on his property, we'll have to address that, I think, in a different way.
And he had offered it to be on his
yes.
property, correct?
I just want to make sure I put that on the record, that if it's not all on his property, that opens up a whole new set of variables.
Right. Involving other landowners.
Correct. Yeah. And then the second question, you said in your testimony that you're going to develop traffic plans. With who? Are you going to talk to the county commissioners, local law enforcement, or are you guys just going to do it yourself?
Well, we've already had conversations with township officials and with county officials and with the road supervisors in most of those areas to address their concerns through the information of public meeting and conditional use permitting process. So we've already had conversations with them.
I just want to make sure you're involving all the local folks.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay. Thank you.
Once we have those plans developed, they'll be sent to them so they have a chance to look at them and comment on them before we do anything else with them.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kalk. Any further questions of Mr. Phillips?
No, Your Honor.
Further questions?
No, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you.
Appropriate at this time to take a 10-minute recess. We'll be back about quarter after. So we're recessed for 10 minutes.